Shalom and welcome to another in our series of podcasts from Temple Beth Am, a dynamic center for conservative Judaism in Los Angeles. This is a recording of Rabbi Avi Havivi's weekly Sidur class.
We've been talking about Jewish theology ideas about God as they filter into the Sidur. We looked at length at ideas about God in the Bible. Now we're looking about ideas about God in rabbinic thinking. So big fancy words, rabbinic theology. Again, rabbinic means rabbis of the classical period, Mishnah, Talmud, Midrash, let's just say, you know, the year 0 to 800, give or take. We also call them in Hebrew Chazal, Chachameinu Zichronam Livracha, our sages of blessed memory. When I see from books in English, they translate this as OBM, of blessed memory. So our sages of blessed memory. And we've been talking a little bit about what I refer to as the inner complexity of God, meaning God is described as having an internal, I'm hesitant to say process. Let me use the word dynamic, meaning God does not necessarily act in one way. God has different internal aspects, so that God acts differently in different ways. And trying to think about this, I think what's behind this is, in general, the Tanakh, the Bible, is not a book of systematic theology. There are parts of it that try to have their own systematic theology, like maybe Sefer Dvarim, the book of Deuteronomy, or the book of Job. Okay, or some of the prophets, they attempt to have their own internal systematic theology. But what we have in the Bible are works, expressions of religiosity from different eras and different times, and they're just kind of stuck side by side. And I think the sages looked at this and they try to say, well, this is all one God and one religious experience. And so how do we connect the dots and how do we bring together elements from different parts of the Bible that superficially seem to not agree with each other? They seem to say different things, but they all must be about one God. And so how do we say, the result of that is they end up saying that God has an internal process that's complex. So, for example, last week, you can't say God is the God of justice all the time, strict justice, or that God is the God of mercy all the time, but rather there are different aspects to God, right, which they may give words to. So the last 2 weeks we looked at, they gave this the phrasing of Midat Hadin and Midat Harachamim, God's attribute of justice and attribute of compassion. The Bible talks about God as executing justice, and the Bible talks about God as being compassionate, but the Bible doesn't say God has an internal dynamic where there's Midat Hadin or Midat Harachamim. Certainly not God, what we saw in a passage, the final passage we looked at last week. God actually, he stands up from the throne, gets up from the throne of judgment, and goes and sits on the throne of compassion because God elects to deal with us differently than, you know, what God had first said. So I think, to summarize, I think the sages are looking at what could appear superficially to be disparate elements in the Bible in talking about God, and they're trying to put it together in one unified theory. And part of the unified theory is to say, well, that's because God isn't one thing or doesn't behave in one way necessarily consistently, but rather God has an internal dynamic or complexity that at times may look to us like God is this or God is that. It's all one God, and it's part of God's internal process. I'm going to pause just to ask if there are any questions about that. I think this is what the sages are trying to do. And of course, they're not as systematic as medieval philosophers, who, because they're philosophers, are more systematic. And so they're going to try to go further than Chazal did in kind of systematizing this and making it all organized. To them, the fact that there are different midrashim, which conflict with each other, is a mess. And so they try to systematize. After, I think, the sages of the Talmud and Midrash have looked at the Tanakh, at the Bible, and they have made some attempt to pull together disparate threads and systematize. And I think that's what we're looking at. Everyone with me? Give me sort of a nod if this kind of makes sense, or shake your head if it doesn't make sense, or if you want me to say it differently. All right. So we're going to look at, we took 2 weeks to look at God's Midat HaDin, Midat HaRachamim. And this week we're going to look at different set of texts, different aspect of God's internal dynamism or complexity. I only have two texts. Maybe we'll have a little more time for discussion. I think they both say the same thing, the second one in a deeper way than the first one. Okay. This is from Midrash Tanchuma, which is, I don't know, a late-ish Midrash, 600, 700, I don't know. It's hard to date these things. You know, if they mention something that seems to be a coded reference to Muslims, then we know it's after 632 of the Common Era. Other than that, it can be a little hard to date these Midrashim. So this is a comment on the verse, Anochi Hashem Elohecha. You know that verse. The first verse of the Ten Commandments in Shemot. I am the Lord your God. Midrash, a question. I don't know. Who else do you think is speaking at Sinai? Why would you say Anochi Hashem Elohecha? Why does the Ten Commandments start with that? With God saying, I am Hashem your God? Or maybe it's a midrashic comment. You know, you never know what the question is. I mean, occasionally they'll tell you what the question is that they're answering. Usually not. It could be what they're answering is Hashem is a singular and Elohim is a plural. Maybe that's the question they're answering. Sorry about that. Why does it say I am singular? Elohecha superficially, grammatically, technically means your deities. Okay, Michael, you're raising your hand. Okay. Anochi Hashem Elohecha. Why? Why does it say this? Why does it say, I am Hashem, your deities? Maybe that's the question. Lefi shenir alahem hakadosh baruch hu bayam kigibor osei milchama. Because God appeared to Bnei Israel at the sea like a warrior. How do we know that? What verse did we read this morning? Go ahead, Alan, unmute. I know what you're saying, but you got on mute.
Okay. It says, from Shirat Hayam, Adonai Milchama.
Ish Milchama. Hashem is a warrior. I mean, we translate in a clunky way, man of war, okay? But it really means Hashem is a warrior. At the sea, Hashem is a warrior, okay? So God appeared to them at the sea as a warrior. Nir'ah appeared here. It's a literal word, right? From the verb ro'eh, to see. So it doesn't mean appeared like, you know, to us, appear can be a metaphor for like, it seems to me. But here it means was seen by them is a more literal translation. God was seen by them at the sea like a warrior. Then near Alahem Bisinai Kisofer Milame Torah. And at Sinai, God looked to them like a scribe teaching Torah. Now, if you're, you know, drill down onto this, you can say, hey, it doesn't say anywhere that in Exodus that they saw God, because God was in the cloud and there was thunder and lightning. But on the other hand, if you remember in the end of Parshat Mishpatim, the Parsha after Yitro, the Parsha that tells the laws, it then says that the elders of Israel ate and drank and they saw God sitting on a throne. Remember that? So maybe that's what it's referring to. So what did God look like? God looked like a scribe, a rabbi. I'm going to put it that way in modern terms. Okay. I'm sure long, wispy, you know, white beard. I don't know. Okay. Niralahem bimei Shlomo, God appeared, looked to them in the days of Solomon like a youth, what might that be referring to? Why is that linked to Solomon and God appearing like a youth? What book is understood to talk about God looking like a youthful young man that is linked to Solomon?
Shir HaShirim,
Song of Songs, which starts Shir HaShirim Asher Li Shlomo. This is a book of Song of Songs, which is has to do with Solomon or concerning Solomon, and it's all about the romance of a fetching young woman and a fetching young man, right? And it is this is understood. We looked at this a long time ago, I think, or maybe that was another class I'm remembering. I don't know. That this is understood metaphorically to be at the romance between God and Israel. Israel is the gal. God is the guy, right? And it says he looked like this and he looked like that. So to Solomon, God appeared, looked like a young man. Okay? V'nirah lahem b'mei Daniel kizaken. And God appeared to the Israelites, looked to people in the days of Daniel like an old man. What passage is that referring to? Hint, we've looked at it in the last few weeks. Anyone remember it? Daniel. What was the image of Daniel? We looked at it. I think we looked at it last week. Thrones were drawn up. The Ancient of Days took his seat. This is Daniel's vision. His hair was fleecy as snow. The court, the books were opened, and the court was in session. Remember that passage? Daniel has a vision of the divine court where everything is written down in books. This is the origin of our of what Chazal, the sages, then transform into the Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur liturgy about the book being open, not liturgy, idea, theology, right? You know, and on Rosh Hashanah it's written, but the book is not signed and sealed until Yom Kippur, so it's still open. So that whole that idea is all an amplification of this image of the in the book of Daniel of chairs are drawn up, the Ancient of Days takes his seat, his hair is white as snow, his beard is something or other. The court is in session and books are opened. Someone wave it at me if you sort of remember that passage from last week. Come on. No? Okay. Total amnesia. Anyway, we read it in the book of Daniel last week. Okay? So the Ancient of Days is God. God is sitting on a throne and looks like an old man. So this Midrash is saying, you know, I have appeared to you, I think the superficial meaning, superficial layer of the Midrash, is about actual physical appearance. You have seen me in various times or visions look different. At the sea, I looked like a warrior. At Sinai, I looked like a scribe teaching Torah, whatever that their image is of what that looks like. In Solomon's time, I appeared as a strapping youth. In Daniel's vision, I appeared like an old man. Okay? Amar lahem HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Lo bishvil shehem roim oto dmuyot harbe. Don't think it's this is a sentence which is interrupted. It's like a first half of the sentence, and then there is no second half, and then it goes on to the second sentence, right? Don't think that because you saw lots of forms, dot dot dot. What would be the dot 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 be? Don't think that just because I appear to you in lots of forms, dot dot dot. What's the ellipsis? Alan, unmute.
Me. There's more than one of me. There's multiple gods.
Multiple gods. Don't think that. Okay. Ani hu shebayam. Ani hu shebesinai. Ani Hashem Elohecha. Okay. It's all me, right? I understand that I look to you differently at the sea and I look to you differently at Sinai. Okay. Remember, God, this line is, when God is giving the Torah at Sinai, and Ochi Hashem Elohecha, it's the first words of the Ten Commandments, which is probably why they don't finish the whole second sentence and say, I am the one in Shir HaShirim and I am the one in the book of Daniel, because those books have not happened yet. So if God would have said that at Sinai, that would have been very confusing to people. Okay. That same old man on the throne that Daniel is going to see, 1,000 years from now, that's me too. Right. But that is the idea in the Midrash. Right. So again, in a superficial linguistic way, I am Hashem, who is Elohim, plural. I may appear to you to be plural deities because I look different at different times. Okay. But it's all Anochi, Hashem. I am God. It's all one God. I don't want you to be confused about this. Now, I think this is the superficial meaning of the Midrash. It's about looks and appearance. Okay. I think the Midrash suggests to us, this is our Midrash on the Midrash. Okay. Our Midrash on the Midrash suggests to us a deeper kind of understanding of that, of this idea, not just about God's physical appearance. All right. What do you think the Midrash is trying to suggest in a deeper way than what God looked like? For audience, it's an audience participation question, not rhetorical. Larry, is your hand still up? He went to, keep the something or other.
Yes, it's still up, but I'm not sure I want to answer that question. I wanted to ask a question, but I'll wait.
Let's pause for a bit, right? So on a superficial, on a manifest level, the Midrash is, I looked to you differently at different times. I don't want you to be misguided and think that this means they are actually different deities. It's all me, Anochi, Hashem, right? The Elohim is all Hashem. It's all me. So what do you think that might suggest other than something about God's looks?
Well, I'll answer by in a way that asks my question.
Okay.
And I know that it's wrong.
Okay.
It suggests that God has corporeal, physical, anthropomorphic, or maybe not just anthropomorphic, but physical embodiment.
Right. So the Midrash suggests that, or says that. Okay.
And I know, and to quote Garrison Keillor, God's a vibrating column of air. And I know that's not right.
So the interesting question is, well, what does the author of the Midrash think? Meaning, is the author of the Midrash as perturbed as Larry is by God, the suggestion of God's corporeality? Of course, we don't know. Okay. We don't know. And I guess I'm saying, yes, that does appear to be the, I will call it the topmost or superficial implies, you know, we use the word superficial as a criticism. Oh, you're being so superficial, right? So I don't mean it as a criticism here. What I mean is the most apparent, if I can use the same word, the most apparent meaning of the Midrash is in the Bible at various times, you are described as seeing me and I look a particular way. That is my corporeality. I don't want you to think that that means that those different apparent corporealities means that there are different deities. It's all me. I looked that way there, and I looked that way there. Okay? So what could the Midrash, if you are upset or disagree with the idea of God's corporeality, you have two options. You could say, option one is to say, I don't believe in God's corporeality, therefore this Midrash is idiotic and useless. Or you could say, well, there's a superficial manifest meaning of what this Midrash is about, but did the author of the Midrash have something deeper in mind also? That's my question, Alan.
Okay. And
I'm asking for, of course, speculation. I know what the manifest meaning is because that's what the words are. And I'm asking for and of course, the speculation could either be, well, let's just cop to it in advance. It could either be what was a deeper meaning that the author of the Midrash had in mind. It could be a deeper meaning that we wish the author of the Midrash had in mind, which means it could be our Midrash of the Midrash. Okay. Alan, then Larry.
Okay. This whole notion of, you know, Elohecha and God in the plural, I think the Midrash may be, as we talked about, maybe just addressing that notion of Elohim and the different manifestations of God, even though it's one God.
Yeah.
And rabbis tie it in, it may be, and I'm speculating here, maybe he's talking about, you know, Elohim is reviewed as God's justice. You know, Adonai is God's mercy.
Okay.
So the name of justice may be coming in here showing that, you know, God is present in this just way, even uh-huh. but it's still one and the same God.
Okay. Good thought. I'm going to push back on a little to say, okay, but then it didn't give me two things. Then I might have said two things. It actually gave me four things for that Elohim. And none of those four things, I think you're starting us out on the trail. None of those four things, I think, are directly about justice or mercy. What are those four things about? You're pointing to a word or a label might be pointing to a quality, which is what you are saying, Alan, I think, right? And
yeah.
you're suggesting the quality of justice or mercy. And I want to say, okay, but I don't think that isn't where the Midrash actually goes. It goes to four different, let's call them, let's say, maybe this Midrash is talking about qualities also.
Yeah, it may be just like God acting in the world and God being present in the world.
Okay, in what ways? If I wanted to push you and say, okay, I don't think it's Midat Hadin and Midat HaRachamim, because I don't think any of those four images are necessarily exactly that. What are those four images in this Midrash? And I guess when I say images, I mean not the physical, but the qualities.
God as teacher.
First one. What's first one? At the sea.
God as a warrior and with strength to save us.
Okay.
God, and then God as teacher.
Yep.
At Sinai.
Yeah.
And then it's for Shir HaShirim, God who loves us.
Yes. Uh-huh. Right.
And as the old one, maybe the God of God, wisdom.
God, or God as parent.
Parent. God as parent. Although, again, I want to remind you the passage in Daniel is actually about judging. Right. So I'll allow you to put in Midat Hadin in there. Right. Right. So there are aspects. So maybe the descriptions, maybe the, hey, there are different images, concrete images. It's all me. Maybe it's trying to talk about the attributes suggested by the images. Right. Sometimes you think I'm fighting on your behalf and I'm like mighty and powerful. And sometimes you think I'm teaching you. And sometimes you think I'm a lover who loves you. And sometimes you think of me as the judge in judgment. It's all me. Okay. So, I think that is something like the deeper meaning of the Midrash, whether I don't know what the author of the Midrash thought about God's corporeality. So I don't know if the author of the Midrash intends to suggest what we just said or not. Can't know. Michael.
I was going to say that just because it says that people perceive God.
Uh-huh.
Ways does not mean that God is corporeal.
Yep. Go ahead.
Because as a common example, people dream all the time, and yep. In dreams you see, quote unquote, see things.
Yes.
Clearly, they're not corporeal.
Yes.
So it's quite possible to perceive something
yep.
that isn't corporeal.
Yeah. By the way, footnote. We'll get to it later. Maimonides Rambam says of all prophecy, except for Moses, which is the fly in the ointment in Maimonides, except for Moses, all prophecy only happens in the prophet's head. There is no vision of a man on the throne. There is no man on a throne in any objective sense that anyone else would see. It's all in Daniel's head. Doesn't mean Daniel made it up, okay? Because Maimonides believes in prophecy, but he's saying there is no objective. Anyone who is standing next to Daniel, and Daniel said, "You see the old man with the beard on the throne?" The person next to Daniel would say, "No, I don't see that." Because for Maimonides, all visions, except for Moses, are happening in the person's head. It's reality. There's a reality to it. It does correspond to God. But so I'm not going to go further than that, because that's, you know, how does that work is too complicated a question. Okay. Right. So you're suggesting to take it, what I said, kind of a little bit further. It's like, oh, it's not just that there are different attributes of me, but you experience me differently at different times. Let's just say, because your history is complex. All right. And sometimes you think I'm fighting on your behalf, so I'm like a warrior. And sometimes you think I'm teaching you Torah, so I'm like a scholar. It's all me. Larry, do you want to, I know you had your hand up. Do you want to add anything to this?
You can stop me at any point, because I think my thinking is in a sort of different realm. The manifestations of God, I think that what the Midrash is telling us is, or asking us, are they like a Marvel action movie where one of the characters takes various forms,
mm-hmm.
but is actually that character and has the powers imbued in that character?
Mm-hmm.
Or is it simply, and I think this gets at what Michael was saying, and I think you were saying, is it simply this is the only way in which we're able to conceive of God, so that God is allowing us to see God in a form that we can comprehend and relate to.
Okay.
So the warrior is not really a warrior.
Mm-hmm.
The old man is not really an old man. The young man is not really a young man.
Mm-hmm.
But how else would God convey to us
mm-hmm.
any of these particular attributes?
Mm-hmm.
In the same way that when Michael was saying, when you dream, you don't dream, I don't think, abstract thoughts.
Thoughts.
Actually, you're probably going to tell me whether I'm right or wrong about this one, but we dream in the concrete reality that we actually comprehend, or at least variations of that that we see every single day. So, is it as you're saying, my mind is saying, is it real, but only in the mind of the prophet? Well, if you think that anything that our brain creates or is able to create is real, then I can understand that concept of God. But if you want to tell me, or the Midrash, or anybody else wants to tell me that these visions are anything more than what I'll call metaphor, then I'll reject that as being as really being a true manifestation of God.
Uh-huh. Okay. Let's look at the next. Thank you. Let's look at the next passage, which I think my interpretation is it tries to say similar things in a less visualized, less concrete way. Oh, by the way, this is from Shemot Rabbah, and it's on a different part of the Ten Commandments. It's actually the line before the Ten Commandments. Et kol hadvarim ha'ele, right? Vaydaber Elohim et kol hadvarim ha'ele lemor. The Midrash is answering the question, why does it say Vaydaber Elohim et kol hadvarim ha'ele lemor? Why couldn't it just say Vaydaber Elohim et hadvarim ha'ele lemor? God said these things. Why does it say kol? I think that's the implied question in the Midrash. Okay? Extraneous word, perhaps unnecessary. Sehu oseh et ha'kol, right? Bivat achat. God does everything simultaneously. By the way, the fact that he uses ha'kol here shows you that this is, in fact, the word in the text of the Torah that's triggering the Midrash. That God does everything. What does it mean that God said all of these things? That God does everything at the same time. Bivat achat. Meimit umechaye bivat echat. He kills and gives life at the same time. Make verofe bivat echat. He smites and heals at the same time. So you might say, okay, that means, you know, the God who does this also does the opposite, and it's a balance of opposites. But here the author goes somewhere a little different. Isha al hamashber yordei hayam v'olchemi barod v'chavushei b'veit hasurin. A woman giving birth, people seafaring. I think they mentioned seafaring because seafaring was dangerous. Okay. And caravans in the desert and people in jail. One person's in the east, one person's in the west, one person's in the north, one person's in the south. Shomea kulan bivat achat. God, again, literally, hears them all at the same time. And then my Hebrew cut and paste from Safaria got very wonky, so things are out of order. V'chein hu omer yotzer, you have to follow my cursor. V'chein hu omer yotzer or uvorei choshech, right? Which we said in our davening, right after Baruch Hu, the first bracha right after Baruch Hu. Okay? Afar kemochei nepach ladam, chazar nepach lafar. Dust turns into a human being turns back into dust. Oh, this is the out of order. Yotzer or uvorei choshech, then it's hofech laboker tzalmavet, the stuff in the Hebrew is out of order. Okay, God turns then the water into blood, first plague, and the blood back into water. God turns the living flesh into dead flesh back into living. That's thought to be about Moses, God turned his arm leprous and then healed it when Moshe was asking for a sign. The staff turned to the snake, the snake turned back into the staff. Hayam nepach leyabasha, chazara hayabasha v'nepcha leyam, right? The dry land turned into ocean, the ocean turned into water again. V'chein dibur, and also in God's speech, zachor yom ha-shabbat l'kadsho, remember the Sabbath day, keep it holy, but also sacrifice two rams on the Sabbath. So wait, which is it? Is it that I'm not supposed to do any kind of labor on the Sabbath? Or I am supposed to sacrifice? So these things, the Midrash is saying, superficially can appear to be contradictory, but God is saying both of them at once. Okay? Ervat eshet achicha lo tigale. Do not uncover the nakedness of your brother. But what's the law that seems superficially to contradict that? When are you supposed to marry your brother's wife? If your brother dies childless, right? You're supposed to, it's a mitzvah, the mitzvah of levirate marriage, that the man is supposed to marry the widow to procreate so that child will be named after your brother. V'chulan amaran bivat achat. All of these apparently contradictory things, again, literally means they're all said at once. But some of the things, like the last two things, were laws. And the previous things aren't laws, they're stories. And the first things aren't stories, they're just qualities of God. God gives life and God meets out death, okay? All these things are simultaneous, as it says, Vaydaber Elohim et kol hadvarim ha'ela lemor, okay? So the Midrash takes this verse very, very far. The verse is about God saying things. All these things. The Midrash does end up with God saying things, meaning God giving laws in the Torah that are apparently contradictory, but God is saying it, kol hadvarim ha'ele. The Torah is saying, God says all these things, even the ones that seem to contradict. But the Midrash starts out taking it much further, right? It's not just about God saying, it's about God's action in the world. God's actions in the world, at one time it's this, and at another time it's that, and it seems to be contradictory, right? People are dying, and Larry's carrying a baby on his shoulder. It's all from God, somehow or other. It's kol hadvarim. So whereas the Midrash is commenting on the verse which said God said all these things, the Midrash is going much further and saying all of these things, right, by the way, and God hearing the prayers of all the people all over the world, right, which is very challenging. Sorry, I just want to say, I hate to get into politics, It also means, you know, God is hearing the prayer of the Israeli soldier in Gaza, and God is also hearing the prayer of the Gazan person in Gaza. God hears it all, okay? Somehow, in ways in which we don't exactly understand because we are human, limited, and finite, somehow God's, let us say, not only words, but attention and actions. What was the word I was going to have? Hold on a second. Attentions and actions. Encompass. That's the word. Encompass all of these apparently, to our superficial human eye, contradictory things. I'm going to pause. So I actually think this midrash is saying the first thing, same thing as the first midrash, but more deeply. The first midrash did not set up oppositions, unless you want to consider youth and old man to be in opposition and scholar and warrior to be in opposition. But this midrash, I think, is saying all of these things in the world, which are attributable to me, which sometimes appear to be contradictory to each other. It's part of Vaydaber Elohim et kol hadvarim ha'ele lemor. God uttered forth all these things. The healer is the smiter. I'm going to pause. I want to see how people digest this midrash. Does anyone have anything they'd like to say based on their digestion of this midrash? And notice, to satisfy Larry, the midrash left the realm of what does God look like. None of this midrash is about what does God look like.
I'm cleaning up some digestion right now. So
I understood that. We saw a little bit of that. Yes, we were privileged to see a little bit of the beauty of the human body. Yes, which I mean literally. The amazing, right? The food comes in, stuff comes in, and stuff comes out. You could actually, you know, add that into this midrash. It would fit just fine, right? Some of it keeps you healthy. Some of it is a waste product. Vaydaber Elohim et kol hadvarim ha'ele lemor. Pause. Thoughts about this? Alan, did Michael leave? Michael had to leave.
Yes.
He did.
Yes.
Okay. I know he'd have thoughts about it. Okay. Bernie, I don't want to call you out. You got any thoughts about it? Anyone have any thoughts about it? I'm going to stop screen sharing. Okay. I think it is, in my humble opinion, I think it is a profound and deep midrash. And it's saying, all these different things going on. By the way, again, we had several things. We had God's actions, which may appear to be contradictory. We had all these people in different parts of the world. God hears all of them. We had these utterances that appear to be contradictory. Okay. God utters all of them. I guess it is the word uttering, vaydaber, which is corporeal, right? But all of these, let us call them, I guess I wouldn't call them here manifestations because they're not appearances, but all of these things that we interpret as acts of God, and I don't mean acts of God in the sense in which it says that on your insurance policy, right? As acts of God somehow, which could appear to be contradictory. Well, we say God is the God of life, right? God is the God of life. It's all about life, life, life. Well, then why do people die? Okay. And the Midrash seems to be saying it's all from God, ultimately. Okay? So I think this is, I would call this a more abstract, more philosophical, I'm going to call it second level, deeper Midrash, that I do think is actually, I don't think the author of the first Midrash and the author of the second Midrash would say we're disagreeing with each other. I think the author of the first Midrash might say, oh, yeah, thanks. You actually said that deeper than I did, and that's what I meant. I think that's what the author of the first Midrash means also. I think he's simply using as the example concrete manifestations, and I think the author of the second Midrash is just saying it somewhat more abstractly. Bernie?
Avi, is the paper that you sent, the Safari, is it going to be on the link?
Yes, it will be on the link today, as it is every day. Yes. Okay. So I think, again, this is the midrashic way the we'll see in a little while, a month or two, the medieval philosophers had more abstract ways of talking about this. I want to take you back to what is the sages thinking? What is Chazal? What is Midrash? It is storytelling. It's not philosophy. So they don't say God is the entity that encompasses all contradictions, because that's not the kind of words they use. They say, oh, you read a story about God, you know, God made Moses' hand leprous, and then God healed Moses' leprous's hand. God is the smiter and God is the healer. It's all manifestations of the same entity, right? Don't think, you know, like in Hinduism, right? There's like the destroyer God and the whatever, the life God. Okay. Everyone have a good day and be Torah, and God willing, we'll meet again next week.
You have been listening to another in our series of podcasts from Temple Beth Am, a dynamic center for conservative Judaism in Los Angeles. If you enjoy these podcasts, we invite you to write a review on the Apple Podcast site or wherever you get your podcasts. For more information about Temple Beth Am, Los Angeles, go to tbala.org.